What's up, Colette?
Oh, I'm hoping today is the day smelling like lime juice is attractive. Is it?
You know what? I think any smell would be attractive on you, or at least almost any smell.
That's a fantastic answer. What can I get for you today?
Well, what's on special today?
The blue milk is extra blue.
I'll take two.
Coming right up. I smell some Old Spice and some spearmint gum. Are you here to non-romantically meet someone?
I am indeed. They should be here any moment.
Hold on 1 second. Let me take care of the person down at the other end. Hey, how you doing? What's it going to be today? Who? The guy at the end of the bar? That's David. Or everyone just calls him D. Fish. He's an all-purpose business talker. From speaking to training to writing books to podcasting, he's always talking to somebody or other about business or beer or what they're listening to on their headphones. You never know which way it's going to go, but it's always interesting. In fact, why don't you go over there and join them?
Hey there. Welcome back to the B3 Podcast. I'm glad that you could join us for another interesting conversation with interesting people. Today, I'm joined by Dan Golden. He is the president and co-founder of BeFound Online. He knows more about the SEO game than I will ever forget. Wait, well, pause. Reverse that. Here's an idea of what Dan and I chat about.
Give someone you either know or don't know a high five. It's that simple. With a smile on your face, give a high five. That'll brighten your day and everybody around you.
I was excited to have Dan on the show because he's super smart, he's super fun, and he has been in the digital marketing game since the very beginning, so I knew he'd have some interesting insights. My name is David J.P. Fisher, but everyone just calls me D. Fish. I'm an author, speaker, and business coach, but today I get to do one of my most important jobs, be your host on Beer, Beats, and Business. So let's get into it. Dan, how are you?
Fantastic. Happy to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. I just heard you open your bottle, so cheers. Welcome to the B3 Podcast.
Cheers. Happy Friday. Glad to be here.
All right. So this season, we're talking to people about connection and this connected world that we live in right now. So I wanted to talk to you because you're a guy who really is deeply immersed in this from a technology standpoint. But how have you seen your business change and evolve because of this connected world that we live in?
Sure. Well, as a digital marketing agency, the platforms that we work with and the platforms our clients need to reach their audience on is so fragmented, right? And the devices that, you know, some of these are just cliches, right? Reaching people across platforms and across device. That's like those are the buzzwords that every technology platform has been trying to tackle over the last decade, really. But really,
okay,
I would say over the last couple of years, the technology is finally catching up to consumers.
Okay.
And I think brands need to think differently about what the customer experience is and how they're, as people are always connected. I'm envisioning this future where brands don't need websites, and that's already happening. I'm not saying go turn your website off, but people want to connect with brands in Facebook Messenger. So this sort of notion of always being connected, you know, from a marketer standpoint, consumers are starting to expect that brands are living and breathing and someone that they want to, not someone, but an entity that they want to talk to and have personal and personalized connections, which is really, really hard. I mean, we're, you know, far past that, you know, that shift from brands that just push out one message to, you know, to their entire audience on a TV commercial. And we're definitely along that journey. And
right. Well, that's actually, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. So that's really interesting. I was just thinking about this. Like, your type of company didn't exist 20 years ago, right? I mean, like, basically, if you were in the ad business, you were just selling TV spots, right? Or newspaper. Like, that was it.
Yeah.
So that's intense. You're kind of making this up as you go along.
Yes. I mean, in a lot of cases, certainly as we were first launching, and you know, when I first got into this company, I was really good at search marketing, but didn't know a whole lot about the other stuff. But yeah, from a service standpoint, you know, the new products are coming out left and right. You know, like we were certainly when we launched the company, Pinterest didn't exist, right? So as
right,
and not like Pinterest is the biggest platform, but as new platforms and new technology, certainly like chatbots and AI are one of those like fundamental shifts. And you can be an expert in the field and study something for a month because it's only been around for 6 weeks. So
right.
You know, in some cases, it's a matter of learn, test it out, get really good at something. And holy crap, we've created a new product offering. And you know what? We're first to market. it's a fast moving new world.
And something you were mentioning, too, was this idea of wanting to connect with brands in a way that's much more kind of two way, right? Like a two way conversation versus just we're going to let the brand talk to us and then we'll react to it. How does that work? The idea of us as people now wanting to engage with a brand, with a company that's this large corporation, like how is that going to happen? Like how do companies become nimble enough to actually, and is that part of that fragmentation where maybe we see big companies, they're not able to, we'll talk about beer later, right? You go, okay, well, maybe Diageo or InBev isn't going to be able to be agile when they're engaging with me, the consumer. So I'm going to go to my craft brewery right down the street because they can be a little more nimble and agile there.
And their beer's better.
And their beer's usually a lot better. I'm not sure where the question is in there, but are we seeing like a challenge that large companies are really wrestling with?
Yeah. I mean, in some cases, it levels a playing field for smaller companies without the giant budgets that are more nimble and willing to put in that grunt work. Obviously, some of that, when you talk about one-to-one marketing, some of that becomes not scalable, and that's where technology comes in.
Right, right.
And I don't think consumers are expecting to jump on a chatbot and have a philosophical conversation with InBev, but they might want to know how many calories. There's lots of questions, and when you sort of think about interactions that that people have with brands, there's advanced stuff that I think can stifle a lot of innovation because if we can't solve for all this, then we're still going to need a call center. And so yes,
right,
but maybe 90% of those communications about business hours, appointment setting, how busy is it there right now, do you have any active coupons this month? Right. Like so many of those things are in the spectrum of machine learning and AI, like the simplest stuff on earth.
Well, it's like what is the phone call that I'm sure most bars or what is the most common phone call that a bar gets? Are you open? Right.
Right.
I picked up the phone. Yeah, we're open. That could probably be handled in a different way. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I've been speaking a lot about conversational UX or the conversational user experience. Consumers are okay talking to a bot if they're asking simple questions. And most people are.
Right.
Right? Like I'm an early adopter of all sorts of like IoT tech. I've got Google Home and Alexa and I've got it hooked up to IFTTT. I'm all over that shit. But you know what? Most
right.
of the time, I want them to play my favorite playlist or turn the light or, you know, turn on Alexa, turn on TV mode and it dims all the lights in the house. And, you know,
right.
Still very, very basic stuff is 98% of how I use this technology. And I'm one of the nerds and early adopters.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of opportunities for brands to connect with consumers more, on a more personalized basis. And Brian Halligan, the founder of HubSpot, I heard him speak a couple of, about a month ago, and he, they built their whole business originally on, forms and leads and email. And he said, like, people don't want to fill out your stupid forms. They want an answer to a question.
Right.
And consumer behavior is certainly changing a lot faster than brands have been adapting to it. So anytime that happens, there's an opportunity for service providers in the middle or, for brands to be first to market or provide the best customer experience in sort of this new connected world.
So a question I would have then is when you think about that process and that so much can be kind of offloaded to AI or chatbot or, to some sort of scalable automation, Do you ever talk to clients about where the dividing line is between, hey, this is when you should have a human engage with your customer versus this is something that you can give to the computer?
Yeah, I think a lot of the, you know, some platforms do a great job of you know, admitting when the machine is stumped and admitting that you're talking to a machine, right? Like certainly, brands that try to do too much or try and fake it, like that's, you're just asking to get called out on a Reddit thread that goes viral and ends, you know. So I think a lot of the technology is fairly decent at bridging that gap when they tell a question is, you know, when they can tell a question is too complex, escalating that to a call center or bringing a human in. And that's the kind of stuff you want a call center, you want them dealing with the hard and complex stuff.
Right, right.
And even some of that, you know, with a lot of our clients, you know, remember, 15 years ago, every website had an FAQ, right, in the navigation that was standard.
Yep.
And that sort of disappeared over the last decade. But when you talk about what needs to go into a chatbot, and there's so many platforms out there that have 90% of this stuff built already, and they just need your data, talk to your sales team, record your calls, ask your call center, ask your account people, ask, you know, I'm making a bunch of generalized departments here, but aggregate all of the questions that people are asking, and you can create content that answers 80% of it. And, you know,
right.
And for some complex questions or issues, create have some white papers or more in-depth blog posts. And so the chatbot doesn't necessarily have to explain all of that, but it can very easily connect the dots to the right, you know, to get people to the right piece of information that might save that phone call, because call centers are expensive.
Yes, us humans are, right? As you're saying that, I'm thinking back to my own experiences engaging and interacting with organizations, larger companies from like a customer service standpoint. And I'm realizing that the times I get mad are when I'm either dealing with a computer, you know, an algorithm, a chatbot, whatever, some sort of automated program, and I know my question needs to be dealt with by a human. Or conversely, when I'm dealing with a human and all I want to know is something that could be on the fact, right? Like it's almost that mismatch is probably maybe the next level of challenge, right? Being able to divert people into the right channels.
Yeah. Traditional IVRs suck. IVR, I don't even know what that stands for, but that's the press 1 to speak to your customer service, press 3, press 37 to speak with Jane. And right. It just goes on. Like those suck.
right.
Voice recognition. And frankly, you know, there's just a lot of antiquated businesses out there. But actually, you know, voice recognition and conversational recognition it sucked up until like last year. The machines are taking over. Computers are getting smarter. I talk a lot about search marketing at conferences, and, you know, I like to make jokes about Ask Jeeves. I happened to actually be at Jeeves' retirement party in 2006. That's how much of an old grizzled search marketing vet I am. But it was, the promise of that platform, it wasn't there when Jeeves was around, but understanding semantics and context, search engines are a lot smarter about that stuff now. So yeah, traditional IVRs are completely unnecessary. And, you know, brands should be able to get you from A to Z a lot quicker. And frankly, I'm sure you'd rather buy from someone else that gives you a better experience. And so brands have to be thinking that way about, you know, how to,
right.
How do their consumers care to interact with them? If you're not reducing friction and making it easy, there's a lot of options out there in pretty much every industry, right? So
absolutely. Making it easy, you would say frictionless to engage with a company, that's really important. Do you think that there's, from what you're seeing, are companies getting too dependent on the technology? Are they almost too resistant to having somebody then be in a call center, right? Because they're expensive. It's just, you know, it's easier to go to the bottom line, but long term, they're going to lose customers, right?
I think so. I mean, I think there are societal, you know, taking this up a level, right? You know, humans versus machines, mm-hmm. right? How many industries or how many advancements in technology have made it, you know, from manufacturing to all sorts of industries where, you know, the role of humans has definitely changed. And certainly as it pertains to like brands and customer service, you know, I don't think humans are ever going to go away. You can't automate everything. And certainly you need humans right. behind, you know, I'm picturing right now from Wizard of Oz, right? The genies behind the curtain. And that's I think the role that, you know, that humans need to play, certainly in marketing and in customer, you know, connecting with consumers. There's definitely a role for humans, but it's different than it used to be. And unfortunately, it's not a role for 1,000 humans to be sitting on a floor, you know, with headsets doing rogue tasks over and over again, or answering right. the same question to, you know, to 10,000 people. So that's changing. And that's, you know, that's scary and awful for the folks that lose their jobs and need to retrain and look at a different industry, but that's the reality of the world we live in. And
yep.
you know, I think even as a digital marketing agency, a lot of the stuff I used to have to, you know, pay people to stare at spreadsheets and upload and update, you know, there's the type of work that we do has changed drastically. You know, we're focusing more on strategy and being thoughtful and how to tweak an algorithm versus change 100,000 bids a day in a spreadsheet.
Right.
Right. How do humans interact with machines and how to work with machine learning and how to apply that human element to get machines the experience with machines more like human interactions. That's those are some of the jobs of the future that probably don't even exist yet, but are definitely on their way.
Right. Well, you don't need a degree. Just call yourself a futurist and then charge a bunch of money to speak at conferences. You know, I think that's all you have to do.
Brilliant.
Well, you were touching on something there, just the way your business has changed. You know, if we think about this digital hyper-connected world that we're in, because you guys are spread not just around the country, you're global, yeah.
Yes, we've got a office with 20 people in London and Singapore, and we've got a hub down in Belize, and yeah, we are all over the place, if you will.
Right. So what's interesting is like not only has technology, you're just saying, it's going to replace some people's jobs, but also it enables jobs as well, right? Was that your plan, or how does a hyper-connected world impact the fact that you've got people in different area codes?
Yeah, I wouldn't call.
I'll do the PG version.
So I wouldn't call that a plan. I would call it jumping at opportunities. You know, the quick story about our London office is we met a gentleman at a conference where my co-founder was speaking at a conference, and hit it off, shared some business with them for a couple of years, and decided to create a joint venture and merge agencies. If you ask me, I think that happened in 2015. If you had asked me in January of 2015 what my plans were for the year, it wasn't like I need to take over London. we found a great opportunity and a great partner and jumped at it. You know, our operations in Belize, another happy accident. One of our favorite and first employees went on a vacation, a Doctors Without Borders vacation down to with her husband down to Belize, quit her day job and bought a pizza shop and decided to stay in Belize. And fast forward a couple years later, she came back and we wanted to get the band back together and miss working together. And then we built an office on the back of the pizza shop in Belize and hired 6 people. You can't plan for that, right?
Sorry. No, I was gonna say like those got to be like the best office meetings ever. It's like, right. It's like, hey, we got a all staff meeting. What do you guys want on your pizza?
Right. Yeah. Could you right could you update that report and include X, Y, and Z, and then also add some pepperoni? And yeah, I don't think they actually worked in the pizza shop, but the office was adjacent to it. Who knows,
okay.
though?
All
who
right,
knows?
All right.
What happens in Belize stays in Belize.
Right. But still, that's fascinating because you could not have done that 15 years ago, right? To go from like, oh, we met this guy, let's have a transatlantic company. That just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, the playing field, or at least the cost to entry for any sort of digital business is so much lower, right? Even that long ago, you would have had to, you know, think about server space and how do you, like, so much, it is so much easier now. Not that business is easy, right? There's competition, all sorts of pressures everywhere, but certainly in terms of the hard cost.
Right.
And, you know, getting started, the barriers have come way, way, way down. You know, and in terms of the leveling the playing field, I mean, it's harder now because it's easier, so much easier for competition to jump in. Right. On the sales front, you've got all these amazing tools and LinkedIn, and it's so easy to find people versus like calling the secretary over and over again and buttering her, you know, buttering the gatekeepers up to, you know, to get through. So you can get through, but there's 100 other salespeople also trying to get through to that same person. Right. And so there's so much noise now, breaking through. Speaking as someone that gets sold to all the time, you know, that's one of the advantages of being on the Inc. 5000 list 6 years in a row is every real estate agent, every recruiter, every, you know, insurance, you know, I hear you're growing your company. Maybe, I am sold to constantly.
Right, right.
You know, and I actually respond to a lot of stuff that I know is, you know, being in the marketing space and understanding how marketing automation platforms work. Like I know when I'm in your sequence, I know when, like,
you know, when you're in the funnel,
yes,
you're like,
yes.
Okay, here's email number two. Yep. I get it.
Oh, it's 10 days later. You send me the breakup email. I get it. Yeah.
Right.
You know, I got some of those over the holiday break where I got the breakup email on January 1st. And I'm like, you started your sequence before break and you made it a 10-day sequence. Come on, Bush League. But in this new world, when someone writes me a real email and I can tell they aren't just blowing smoke and saying like, oh, the orange jacket, now buy my platform. Like when someone sends something that's authentic and real or asks for help or advice, like I give people time. And so in some case, the antithesis of what I started out blabbing about in terms of technology and chatbots, realizing that, especially if you're a small company or an entrepreneur, do something a little different, actually personalize and just spend a little extra time.
Right.
And you'll find it's going to be a hell of a lot more expensive than, you know, instead of spending an hour setting up a sequence and buying a list to send out 10,000 emails, send 10 really, you know, go on LinkedIn, research, find people, learn about them and send 10 really good emails. And that will probably have a better ROI than the automated crap that most people are dealing with.
Right. And by the way, that arc that we just went through in the last 15 minutes, I think is actually what we're dealing with, even as a society. Like what happens when you can have all of this automation and there's these amazing things that it can do, but you also then get more noise and you're like, I just crave a human person. Right. Saying something legitimate to me and authentic. I think you just encapsulated, you know, the whole arc of challenge and evolution right now. And you're the bomb. And by the way, really good plug there too. I wanted to say I was impressed with the Inc. 5000.
It was within context. I didn't even plan that.
Totally contextual. It also, we'll talk about music in just a moment, but you know, you're a guitarist, I'm a drummer, we were both playing in bands back in the day. Like I think of like starting a band now, and in some ways I'm like, oh my gosh, how awesome would it be, just, you know, GarageBand, YouTube, like
do you know how many flyers I printed and taped on things and handed out? And oh my god, it was like 5 years, and it was flyers everywhere. I couldn't go to a bar with, if I didn't have flyers, I was doing something wrong. Flyers, so many flyers.
I remember cutting and pasting flyers with scissors and tape. Yeah, like these days, these kids don't know how easy they have it. They just, you know, plug a couple things in their computer and they've got a recording studio. But to your point about the noise, I'm like, man, it'd be so much easier to create music right now. And there's just so much out there that actually being heard would be just as challenging, right? It's easier to put that demo together, but you know, now you've got, you know, 10 times as many demos you're competing against.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would say it's much easier to interact and activate your existing fan base, right? So once you have, you know, it used to just...
Once people know you. Yeah, absolutely.
Sign up for our mailing list. Please go to the back of the bar and give us your email address. Like that was our only call to action other than buy a t-shirt, please. And
yeah.
In that sense, you know, bands that have an audience, I think there's a lot. I think technology's on their side. Bands that are trying to find an audience. Yeah. It is a noisy, literally. There's too much noise. I wouldn't know where to start.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you better like your own music. As we were interviewed once, I remember in the band, and we said one of the biggest things you have to do is make music you like, because you might be the only people that listen to it.
Speaking as someone who's been outnumbered by the bar staff at a gig we've played here and there, of course, yes, that's very true.
Yeah, right. Well, hey, here's a good chance to pause for a second. Everyone, as you know, you are listening to the Beer, Beats, and Business podcast. I'm Dee Fish, your host. If you want to reach out, have a chat with me, please do. Easiest place to start that conversation is on Twitter, at dfishrockstar. And of course, you can find our home base online, beerbeatsandbusiness.com. While you're there, leave us a review. Give us a 5-star rating if you're listening on iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. And my guest today is Dan Golan. He is the president and co-founder of BeFound Online. They have won the number one best place to work, so they must be pretty okay. And as he's already mentioned, they have many times been on the Inc. 5000 list. Dan, where can people find out more information about you guys?
On the internet. We can be found online. So fairly straightforward, right? BeFoundOnline.com. Same thing on Twitter. You can find me directly at the Golden Dan or... find me on LinkedIn. You know, we're in all the places everybody can find us. And per the message I gave on sales, give me a personalized message. I love talking shop. Always happy to help people, make connections, give advice. Give me an authentic reach out and you'll hear back. So that's my pitch.
I love it. I love it. He's telling the truth. And Dan has forgotten more about SEO and digital marketing than I will ever know. Let's talk music. I will admit your college band was a little bit more popular than mine. And we did, by the way, fellow to all our listeners, we did go to the same school, but you were a year or two behind me. But what are you listening to these days? What's getting you excited?
Yeah, my tastes are all over the place. I know a lot of people say that. And I've moved into a mode of... I've been making a lot of playlists, and to me, it's less about genre and more about mood.
Okay. All right. So like the flavor of the music.
The flavor of the music or the way it makes me feel. Right. And that's, you know, that's always, okay. You know, subjective and different for everybody. But let me tell you, man, I've got this, this playlist, it's got 30, you know, it's about 2.5 hours and it's called Happy Tunes and it's all songs. Whenever I hear them, they make me happy, right? It's got everything from like, you know, Donovan Frankenreiter, Modest Yahoo, Grateful Dead, Foxygen, Wolfpack, Chicano Batman's got some, like, it's all over the place. But they're all songs that just make me happy that are, you know, not all in a major key, but I don't know, music that I find uplifting and fun.
Nice.
I've actually been curating. So that's my Spotify playlist. I grew up in a house full of jukeboxes. My dad somehow found an estate sale in the early 90s and bought like 7 vintage jukeboxes and restored them over the course of a bunch of years. And when I finally bought a place in Chicago, we shipped one out. So I got a Wurlitzer, a 1954 Wurlitzer. That is,
oh, that's cool.
The coolest thing about it is I could say, okay, Google, turn on the jukebox and it will turn on this old vintage jukebox in the corner. Just a smart switch, really low tech, but it impresses the hell out of everybody.
You're like the Fonz, man. You're like the 21st century Fonz.
There we go. That's so cool. I'll take it. So that has been really fun because I would probably say the 70s are my decade, even though I didn't exist during then. I might have been in the embryonic stage in the 70s. I'm a child in 1980. It makes the math really easy.
So the 70s were just a warm up for you, really. So that makes sense.
So this
was your opening band.
Exactly. But the jukebox thing has been fun because I guess they stopped making 45s or those 45 singles in like the mid 90s. So I've just kind of been, you know, I've calmed down a little bit. My eBay bill has lowered as of late, but I mean, it's basically like any old song that I really like, I just find the record and, you know, that is sort of the ultimate playlist. I got 50 records, 100 plays, right? A side and B side. So I'm constantly evolving my favorite playlist, which has been a whole lot of fun.
That's awesome. I love it. I just can't get the idea of you as the Fonz out of my head. You're like, hey, Alexa, play the jukebox.
The modern Fonz. I love it.
The modern Fonz. Well, very cool. Speaking of beer, what are you drinking these days? What are you getting fired up about?
Yeah. So I still just love me some brown ales. I'm an ale guy. I feel like I'm drinking less these days. So I've been indulging in heavier beers that pack a lot of flavor. Let me still say this, though. On a hot summer day, there is nothing that hits the spot like a Busch Light. As a fellow Northwestern grad here, Evanston's First Liquors, when I first came to college, their 30-pack of Busch Light was $9.99, and that's what got me started. But that is
there you go.
I know where it comes from, but still. I like it better than any other light beer out there. I stand by that.
I think it's important. No, I think it's important to have a crappy beer, like your crappy beer. I've gone on record. Mine is High Life. You know, I'm not saying it's an amazing beer, but if you're in Chicago, it's July, you're at a barbecue, it's 83 degrees. You're not going to drink a stout.
Yeah.
Right. You're not going to chew on a porter. You just want something super cold that you pull out of the cooler. Right. Shake the ice and the water off it. Hop that bad boy open. I get it.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
All right. Well, let's focus there because we could always talk about craft beer and that kind of stuff. I will also say that in the to just take it down a level, because why not? You know, King Cobra was always my jam when it was time to play Edward 40 hands. But I tell you, those Mickey's hand grenades that have the little quiz under the top. there's something about, I went to this, this entrepreneurs conference, the YEC Escape, which was awesome. 60 entrepreneurs, at a ski escape, just a great event. But, you know, people were bringing all sorts of fancy stuff and I brought Mickey's and people loved it. Reminiscent.
Well, right. Well, because in the end, most crappy beer always has a nostalgia essence to it. Like, I don't care how fancy you get. You don't start out as like a 21-year-old or younger, depending on your personal biography. You don't start out drinking good beer. Like, it's just because it's either A, too expensive or you can't appreciate it.
Yeah.
Right? Just like my friends in college didn't start out drinking, you know, very high quality wine. They started drinking wine in a box.
Boone's, baby.
Oh, Boone's Farm. I did not drink that. I did not, but I've got really good dirt on a number of my friends.
We had a summer of Boone's between junior and senior year. Oh.
I am so sorry.
Somehow this turned into a confession, I guess, on it, but
yeah. Well, before we talk about drinking even worse alcohol, I think that's probably a good place for us to stop. Dan, I always ask all of my guests at the end of our conversation. If you could give a tip, one simple thing that they could do to make today a better day, what tip would you give them?
Oh, boy. Give someone you either know or don't know a high five. It's that simple. With a smile on your face, give a high five, an unexpected one when someone isn't ready for it. That'll brighten your day and everybody around you.
Perfect. Perfect. Dan, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me. Good stuff.
As always, thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links to the topics in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your favorite podcasting services. This episode, like all others, is brought to you by our regulars over at Patreon. If you'd like to be one of the people with your own spot at the bar, we'd love to have you. Visit patreon.com/B3 and become a regular today. Want to get in on the conversation? Easy. Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar, and we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
Yeah, we should get together and drink some boons.
we can also just get together again and have some good beer. I'm okay with that.
All right, let's do it.